Hey everybody, welcome back to Passions Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the soap opera passions. I am your regular host, Latara, back again after a hiatus. I don't have a co-host today for several reasons, but I wanted to start this show by saying thank you to everybody for just the outpouring of love and support. Sorry, this is why I don't have a co-host, but I just want to start out by saying how much I really, really appreciate everything, all the messages that I got, all the cards, that everything that everybody, the love that everybody sent to me, the support everybody sent, like, thank you all so much. You really are, like, my passion for life. It's been a hard time, but I knew I wanted to come back because this is something that makes me happy, and I need to be doing things that make me happy, so... Sorry, I'm going to pull myself together. So, like, a lot has changed since the last time I did this show, but basically, I quit my job. I just quit my job. I quit my job for a lot of reasons, but one of the big reasons was that I just want to be able to take some time and devote time to the things that I like and the things that I want to do. So I will be putting a lot more time into Passions Podcast because I wasn't really able to spend much time focusing on it while I had my full-time job. So there's going to be like more things. Hopefully that's the plan. First thing is I made new merch. So I've got these Passions Podcast t-shirts. Some of them just say Passions. Some say Passions Podcast. This one's my favorite. With Teresa, and it says Lovable Lunatic at the bottom. This one has like different lettering because it was like the first one I tried out, and then when I got it, I didn't love the lettering, so I made new t-shirts, but they're basically the same as this one. Look at my girl, so cute. This Barbie is a lunatic. I went to see the Barbie movie yesterday, so I got that on the brain, and my shirt's pink. So anyway, thank you. Things are gonna be happening more. Yeah, before we get started, I want to give a shout out to the patrons over on Patreon. Thank you to Munashe, Marcus, Brelin, Lisa, Sid, Randall, Hannah, Camelia, Samantha, Jeanette, Eric, Fantasia, Sean, S, Larissa, Maria, Greg Lopez, Fitzgerald, Lisa, and Jessica Jean. Thank you all so much for continuing to support me. And support this podcast. I love and appreciate you all so, so much. And again, it's unpaused now, but you shouldn't have been charged for the time that I was on pause. If you were, just let me know, but you shouldn't have been charged. All right, so today we are going to be talking about episodes 501 through 505. And honestly, it was like an okay week. Like, it wasn't super boring, but it wasn't like pow, 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 like the 495 through 500 were, or like those 10 episodes leading up to 500 were, but it was still like some stuff happening. A lot of shoeies, like a ton of shoeies. So we're actually going to start with them this week because they are basically half the show. So, just a reminder, it is Luis and Sheridan's dumbass engagement party night, right? Like, they've been at their engagement party. Luis had been called away. Sheridan had to, got these weird phone calls. So she went and she found Luis making love to another woman. And when she confronted him about it later, he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I was at work this whole time. Of course, it was the imposter and the lovely Dee Dee. What did we call her before? Delicious Dee Dee, I think, is what maybe we were calling her. But so Sheridan actually goes back over to the house because she gets a phone call from Dee Dee, who is screaming and saying, like, help. Well, not really help. It was like, this is all your fault. Like, he gets so violent and yada, yada, yada. And then she hears Luis, like, hit her in the background. And, of course, Rebecca and Julian, like, set all of this up. So Sheridan comes over. Rebecca and Julian hide in the closet. Sheridan comes in And she confronts Luis, this imposter Luis. They go back and forth. And that's where we pick it up this week. We pick it up where he calls her, the fake Luis calls Sheridan stupid and a gullible fool. And she says, "I never want to see your filthy, disgusting face ever again." And she marches to the door, opens the door, and there stands real Luis in the flesh. And she goes, "I can't believe it. There are two Luises." Which I loved. Like, she delivered it better than that, but it was very sensational. "I can't believe it." So there are two Luises. Rebecca and Julian are hiding in the closet, cowering and going like, "What the hell is Luis doing here?" As if, I mean, they should have seen this coming, I feel like. But whatever. They're goons. They're just a couple of goobers. They're goofy goobers. So Luis comes in, guns blazing, and he angrily questions this imposter. How did you get my face? Why would you do this to Sheridan and me? Why do you want to hurt us?" I mean, it's just like question after question after question, and no space for an answer. Not that he's gonna get one, because this imposter answers, "No comment." Like, sir, you about to get your ass beat. Like, I need you to be a little bit more humble. But he says no comment at first, and then Luis questions him some more, and he says, "Well, what can I say? There's not a lot to do in Harmony. Just getting some thrills in Harmony. Just find it's just something to do." And Luis set notes, "Oh yeah, that's right. This has been going on for over a year." And then the imposter denies that he was the one on the wharf when he said was on the phone and Sheridan overheard him saying that he was just using Sheridan, which seems silly to me that he would even try to deny it at this point. Why would they believe you? You know, why would they believe you? But he's adamant that that was not him. And he's a good actor, so he's like putting on a show. He's like, "I just don't want to be accused of something I didn't do." As if you have any fucking honor, sir. You have, like, shut up. So Luis works out that Dee Dee and this imposter did not just come up with this scheme out of the clear blue sky. Like, they didn't make this up. This wasn't them. And he asks them, "Who are you working for? Who put you up to this? Who paid you to do this?" And the guy's like, "I'll never tell," basically. And Luis just bum rushes him, jacks him up, attacks him. And Sheridan tries to stop him. Like, he lifts him up in the air. And Sheridan's like, "No, Luis, stop." And Luis, like, puts him back down. He turns to her. He's like, "I'm cool. I'm actually in control. There's just something I need to do." And he says it so calmly. And he turns around and just punches this dude right in the face, and he just falls to the floor. And so he knocks him out, and he peels that mask off of his face. And he's like, "Damn, this is a good mask. There's no way you paid for this. This had to cost a fortune." And he said, "And also, you have no motive. You don't know me. You don't know Sheridan. Why would you do this?" And he says, it's obvious who it was. It was Julian and Alistair. That's what Louis says. He says, "They're the clear culprits here. They're the only people who have the motive and the money to do something like this." And it turns out, Sheridan, I can't remember exactly what it is that Sheridan said. I think Sheridan said something along the lines of, "You were right." And so we realize that this is a trap that Luis and Sheridan had actually set together. Because when you're watching it, it seems like Luis has gone back to work. He had to go on to a stakeout, is what he said. So it looks like he had gone back to work, and that Sheridan this that this all had worked out, and that he just decided to follow Sheridan. But it turns out that they've set this plan together to figure this all out, which is smart cookies, a couple of smart cookies. So Luis tells the duo, Imposter and Dee Dee, that he wants the whole story. And he says this. He says, "Give me the whole story, and then I'll decide if you live or die." You are a police officer. You can't. You're supposed to be the long arm of the law. Then I'll decide if you live or die. I mean, this was rough. Like, what they did to Sheridan and Luis is real fucked up, but that seems excessive. Die? Okay. Murder here? Okay. So he tries to get them to name the Cranes as the culprits. He tries to get them to say, like, the culprit, the Cranes are the ones who did it. But the imposter refuses. He says to confirm something like that is worse. Is worse than you killing me. Like, they'll do far worse to me than anything you can do to me. And Dee Dee then starts to, like, she breaks. She's already been the weak link. I mean, I wouldn't call her the weak link because she's like, just because she has a conscience. But she's already been like, why are we doing this to them? Like, what is this about? This is horrible. But she was going along with it because she needed the money. So she starts to plead and apologize, saying that she just really needed the money. You didn't deserve this. Nobody deserves something so horrible. What we've done to you is terrible. And he says, she says they're really in love and they deserve to be together. And then the imposter threatens her, saying, shut up. Like, what do you think they'll do to you, right? And she's like, oh my gosh, you're right. If they're willing to do this to them, imagine what they'll do to me, basically. And she gets really scared. And Sheridan like begs her to do the right thing. She's like, come on, please just say it. Just say it. And Dee Dee refuses. She's too scared. Then Louise does this grandstanding about arresting this imposter. Well, you know what? It's not grandstanding. He should have arrested him. And I don't know why he didn't. Spoiler alert, he didn't arrest him. He never arrests this man. He grandstands. So I'm actually right. He grandstands about arresting him. He says, the imposter's like, what did I do? I didn't commit any crimes. You can't say I impersonated a police officer. I was never wearing the uniform. And Luis is like, what about stealing my identity? Which I think could stick. I think that could definitely stick. Identity theft, fraud. At the very, he hit Dee Dee. We know he hit her, so there's battery right there. I mean, we got some things to work with here, and you are a police officer. Throw the book at him. Throw the book at him. Come on, cop. So he tries to arrest him, but then he just punches him again. Just punches him in the face. And the imposter tries to escape, and so does Dee Dee. But Sheridan catches Dee Dee and she says, don't even try it, girly. I have a black belt in karate. And then she handcuffs her to the door. And so then the imposter manages to get a knife. I don't know where the knife came from. I don't know if he had it and he dropped it when he fell or something like that. But he pulls a knife and he threatens Louise, saying, like, if you don't let me go, I'll kill you and her. And long story short, he fucks it all up and gets caught. And oh, Sheridan karate chops Dee Dee at one point. Like, it becomes like this big scuffle. And she's like, really, hi-ya karate. I think she says hi-ya. And karate chops Dee Dee like in the neck. Because Dee Dee tries to run away. So when during this whole scuffle, Julian and Rebecca are in the closet, like, terrified that they will be discovered, but they still haven't been discovered. But during this like fight, Luis takes the imposter and throws him into that closet door, and it smashes, and all is revealed. Julian and Rebecca are in there, and they come on out of the closet. They come out of the closet, and Luis is livid. He says to Rebecca, he says, sit down. He says, sit down and don't sit in front of Julian because he's hid behind your skirt for too long. And Julian like scurries over next to her and like tries to cozy up next to her. Like because you know, he does hide behind Rebecca. I think you will recall that at the party when TC attacked Julian, that he grabbed Rebecca and put Rebecca in front of him as a shield. So he does hide behind Rebecca. That was so spot on. Hides behind her skirt, according to Luis. So then Sheridan and Louise just like admonish Julian and Rebecca for his crimes. Louise calls him twisted, tells him that his plan has backfired and he's gonna pay. You're gonna pay for this. They chastise them like little kids and then just recap the whole plan, recap all the things that they had done. And it was like he should have just punched. I don't know why he didn't just beat the shit out of Julian. I don't get that. I don't get it. I guess because Julian is rich and powerful, I guess. But it seems like you would have hit him, right? I know I probably would have, honestly. So Sheridan then reveals to the two of them that they, when they got back together the first time after the plan wasn't really working, and they went to the library to tell Julian and Rebecca that they had stayed together, that was all part of their plan because she says, we knew that if we told you that we were still together, all we had to do was sit back and wait for you to hang yourselves, which is exactly what they did. So, Luis does start to rough Julian up. He picks him up and like shakes him. And Julian starts to beg for his life, saying he was just trying to protect it. I was just trying to protect my sister, and you would do the same for dear Teresa. And that like sets Luis off. He's like, the hell I would. He's like, I wouldn't have to do something like this, which he's absolutely right. He wouldn't need to do this kind of bullshit to protect Teresa. He would literally just have a conversation with her. Not that Teresa would listen, but still, it would never come to this for Luis, this type of deception. So Luis objects, says, I'm nothing like you at all. Julian was kind of trying to frame it as if he was trying to protect his sister from having to live like this life of a poor person and making a big mistake with the wrong man. But so Luis then says, I know that it must be killing you that I'm just a regular blue collar guy and that Sheridan's just gonna have to live on my little cop salary. And I know that must be killing you, but I know that's not the reason that you did this. I know the real reason you did this, and the real reason you don't want me with Sheridan is because you don't want me getting close to what happened to my father. You don't want me to have access to the Crane Mansion and the grounds, and because once I have that, I'll have what I need to find out what happened to my father, and I'll be able to bury you and Alistair because I know the two of you had something to do with his disappearance. He's not wrong. He's right on the money on that. And so he says to Julian, because remember, Julian's begging for his life. He says, I'm not going to kill you, Julian, because after tonight, you'll wish I had. And then he says, I'm sparing you for Sheridan's sake. And then he says, I'll pretend like tonight never happened at all. And then he says, once I marry Sheridan, I'm going to be on you like white on rice. And once I get the proof that I need, I'm gonna come down on you hard. That's what he says. And then he just lets the imposter and Dee Dee go. He just lets these two criminals just walk out the door. It's inexplicable. I don't know. I didn't get it. I don't understand it. If y'all can explain it to me, please do, because the easier thing would just be to arrest them, have them put in jail, and then like Passions often does, never bring it up again, right? Never bring it up again. But that's not what they did. I guess it's the it gets to the same ending, right? We're never gonna bring it up again anyway. So, before letting Julian and Rebecca leave, Sheridan walks over to Julian and just slaps the shit out of him. She's like, no, you can't leave yet. And then she walks over to him and just slap right across the face. After she slaps him, she just berates him, saying, how dare you and father use my need for family against me? How dare you use my wish for love to almost cost me the only real love I've ever had? What did father do to you growing up to make you like this? Do you ever look in the mirror and wonder what you've become? Do you ever think of mother when you're doing these horrible, awful things? Like, she really went in on him, and Julian was look he was looking like a little child who was being admonished by his mother, who was being having the finger wagged at him, and felt he looked like he did feel guilty, especially when she brought up their mother. And then she says to him, "You can go back and tell father that your little plan had the opposite effect. I love Luis with all of my heart, and I'm even more determined now to spend the rest of my life with him, and there's nothing you can do to stop me." So then Rebecca and Julian leave, and Luis comforts Sheridan. They go back to the cottage. They congratulate themselves on a job well done, right? And Luis says to her, "Now there's nothing your family can do to tear us apart. They're losers." He calls them losers. He calls them losers. He says, "They're losers for not having you in their lives." I mean, it was sweet. It was also like, it was just kind of funny to me they called them losers, those losers. So while all that is happening inside of the cottage, we get a glimpse outside of a shadowy figure with a cigar. Might it be? Yes, it is. Alistair Crane has come back to Harmony. Now, we still don't see his face. We really just see his midsection, his torso and his hands. But it's definitely Alistair. And so he's lurking the grounds at this point. He's standing outside the cottage looking in through the window, and it's weird because he's a weird guy. He's a weird dude. Kind of like Elon Musk, just rich and fucking weird. So, and just wants to see the world burn. So, elsewhere at the mansion, Julian is telling Rebecca that he's like coming to terms and comes to grips with the fact that our plan has failed, and now I'm gonna have to kill my own sister. He's really upset about it. He doesn't want to. He's shaken up. He doesn't want to have to do it. The fact that he's even conflicted about it tells you that he's a bad person, right? But also the fact that he's conflicted about it tells you that he's not as bad as you think he is. He's not as bad as Alistair, who is in no way conflicted about it. So, he tells Rebecca he's gonna have to kill his own sister. He's a little shaken about it. And Rebecca attempts to console him, and he wonders if Alistair knows already that the plan didn't work. And then we hear the phone start to ring, like they're standing out in the hallway outside of the office area that they're usually in. And we hear the phone ringing, and Julian is like, "Oh my God, oh my God, I'm sure that's father. Oh my God, oh my God. Hope maybe he'll stop calling. Maybe he'll stop." And so they wait till the phone stops ringing, and Julian like breathes a sigh of relief, and Rebecca try goes back to like trying to comfort him, but also like now she's initiating like sexy time with him, and he's like, "Oh yes, Rebecca, oh yes." And so they're going into this, they go into the office while they're like feeling each other up, and it's dark, and they get to the couch, and the phone rings again, and Julian says, "Oh, let it ring. I'll call him back tomorrow." And then Alistair like taps on the desk, and he turns on the lights, and he's like, "No need to call me back tomorrow. I'm already here today." And Julian, it was like watching a cat. Like when cats get scared, like the way they like jump around, like the way they look when they jump, it was like that. He was a literal scaredy cat, or a figurative scaredy cat. But he really looked like a cat that was had been frightened. And he's like, "Oh, father, father, when did you get here?" And he's like, I'm here. Don't worry about when I got here. I see you fucked up again, Julian," basically. And then he says, "I'm here to clean up your mess, Julian. I'm here to clean up another one of your messes." Then Alistair goes in on Julian, admonishing him for being such an idiot. And then Rebecca is sitting there like listening to this, and she stops Alistair and says, Now this was weird, and they could have left this out. I could have gone my entire life without knowing this information. Rebecca then inserts herself into the conversation and she says, "Oh, hello, Mr. Crane. I'm Rebecca. We've actually met before at Ivy and Julian's wedding. You may not remember, I was the maid of honor." And then he says, "Oh, I remember, Rebecca." And we cut to a flashback of him fucking her, like in a quickie stand-up style, right before the wedding. I was like, I could have done gone my entire life. So they're like, let me just, since I had to see it, I'm gonna tell you about it. They're having like sex, right? And she like moans, "Oh, Alistair," and he grunts, "Call me Mr. Crane," as he's like pumping. Oh my God. Oh my God. Why would they subject me to that violence? Horrible. Horrible. Straight to jail. Terrible. But anyway, he says, "Oh, I remember Rebecca." Whatever. They could have left that out. It was so stupid. I think it was just another one of those things where they're trying to show us what Rebecca's true character is, but we already know what Rebecca's true character is. They're also trying to make her out to be like super slutty. I don't love that. Like, I know that that's what she's supposed to be, but it just was not doing it for me. So anyway, so then he after that little flashback, we come back to reality, and Alistair says he's worked up a new plan. Sheridan must be killed. Boy, that's the old plan. That's not the new plan. That was the first plan. That was the first plan. Then Julian did his plans and all his other little shit that has always failed. And now we're back to plan A. Like, you were ready to kill Sheridan episode one. Stop acting like this is new. This is not new to you. You've been trying to murder your daughter for years at this point. It's ridiculous. So yeah, Sheridan must be killed is what Alistair says. He won't tell them what the plan is, though. He says just stay close and be ready for your instructions. Also, I should note that Rebecca tries to get up to leave and excuse herself from this conversation multiple times. And every time Alistair's like, "Bitch, you're in this now. Like, you're a part of this." I think at one point he says, "You're up to your neck in Sheridan's blood already, Rebecca." So, yeah, you're up to your neck in Sheridan's blood already, Rebecca. Look at you. Look at what you have sunk to. But and she's gonna keep on sinking. So later, after Alistair leaves and it's just Rebecca and Julian, Rebecca, rightfully so, questions Julian about what the hell happened to Martin. Why are y'all going to such great lengths to keep what happened to Martin a secret? Why would you be willing to kill Sheridan? Like, what happened to Martin? And Julian gets very somber, like a very there's a it's a very somber moment, and he tells Rebecca, "I cannot tell you." And she keeps pressing it. She's like, "Well, if I'm gonna commit murder, help you commit murder, I think I deserve to know." And he says, "If I told you, we would have to kill you too." Girl, get the fuck out of here. She's in too deep. She is in too deep. It's like, I don't feel sorry for Rebecca, but I wouldn't wish this situation on anybody. That's scary. If I told you, I'd have to kill you too. And this man is plotting to kill his sister and the other, and with his father. A father and son duo are plotting to kill their daughter and sister, respectively. Horrible, horrible. So the next morning, Alistair doubles down on wanting to kill Sheridan. Julian comes in like, "Hey, remember we talked about what we talked about last night? Are you sure we have to kill Sheridan? Like, isn't there another way? Isn't there something else we could do?" He gives him a little pushback, but he of course doesn't have the actual courage to truly go against Alistair on this. He's just trying, like, "Hey, father, you don't really mean this, right?" But Alice is like, "No, we have to kill Sheridan." So let's go back over to the cottage really quickly. Sheridan and has been up all night. Louise doesn't know. He gets up. He's in a good mood. He's shirtless. He's strutting through the house. Comes through. He's talking to her about breakfast. Like, do you want some eggs Benedict or something? Something. And then he makes a joke about her not being able to cook. But she doesn't laugh. And he realizes something's wrong because she has her back to him. And he goes around and she's crying. And she tells him she's been up all night thinking about how her family hates her, basically, and that she's been struggling with this realization that they have never cared about her and they never will. Oh, poor Sheridan. Oh, poor Sheridan. This is so sad. Oh, poor thing. While she's having this conversation with Louise about her family, Alistair is still in the office with Julian, and he takes out this little spy device where that helps him listen in on people's conversations. So Julian then sees it and says, "Oh, is that how you n always know everything? You're always listening in on us." And he says, "Well, when I'm listening in on you and Rebecca, it's mostly animal. All I hear is animal noises." So stupid. But yes, he has been just listening in on his like spy device. I don't know. It's like a listening device. But my question is, because has he been in harmony the entire time and like he's in range with this device? Or are the houses bugged and this device picks up the signals? I think that's probably what it is. That makes more sense. That makes sense. I'm working it out. I'm by myself, so I have to work it out by myself. The houses must be bugged with certain devices, and he can like tune in to each frequency and listen in on what's going on. I think that's what I got it. I think I worked it out. Anyway, so he's listening in and he overhears this conversation that Sheridan is having with Luis, and he hears her saying she would love, I'm sorry. He hears her saying she would have done anything to have Alistair tell her that he was proud of her or to hug her just once. And then she talks about how he never visited her or responded to any of her letters when she was away at boarding school as a girl. She says she would trade everything in, all of her like money and fame and, influence. She would trade it all in just to have a father who loved her. Oh, Sheridan, 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 my sweet, sweet baby Sheridan. Like, this is why I can't slander Sheridan anymore. Like, I just, it, I think, I know that at a certain point I will be able to slander Sheridan again, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. But knowing what I know, watching it this way, I think, I don't know that I'll ever be able to accept much more Sheridan slander. And I'm saying that, but I know I'm going to slander her a little bit soon. But like slight. It'll be like a little bit, just a little bit, like slight. But listen to this poor woman. She traded everything just for a father who loved her. Oh my God. So Luis tries to cheer her up, right? He's like, "I'm going to get you the best wedding present. What do you want? What think of something that you would love. What can I do for you to make you feel better?" And she kind of looks away and smiles, and he's like, "Okay, what is it? What is it? I can see you thought." And she says, "It's stupid. It's silly. It's silly." And he says, "What? What is it?" And she says, she says, "I want my father to come and tell me he loves me." Girl, that's not a wedding gift. How could Louise possibly get you that? Which is what Louise is like, "Well, I can't get you that." Like, we just talked about how he doesn't love you and how he hates you. Like, I'm gonna do a little slight slander. Girl, come on. Babe girl, come on, please. But it was sad. She just wants her the greatest gift. The greatest gift for her would be for her father to come and tell her that he loves her. 'Tis a gift to be simple. So, Alistair, upon hearing this, Alistair, upon hearing this, decides to use Sheridan's need for his love to drive Sheridan and Louise apart. That's what he says. We're gonna play on her emotions, and we're gonna use her need for our love and my love, really. We're gonna use her need for my love and my affection to drive a wedge between the two. So then Sheridan and Louise start talking about building a family and how they're going to have kids. And this seems to perk Sheridan up some. Louise is happy. Like, they're having a sweet conversation. You know, it's cute to, like, when you have a conversation with your partner about, like, how many kids do you think we'll have? And then she has a moment where she goes, she, like, perks up, or she has, like, this moment of, like, you know, when you can see an idea or the wheel spinning in somebody's head. Well, she goes, maybe if I had a grand, if I gave Alistair a grandson, what, girl, what? She says, maybe if I give Alistair a grandson, he'll come around. Good God, girl, get a grip. Get a grip. That's the extent of the slander I'm going to give to Sheridan today. But, like, come on, girl. Come on. He has a grandson. Fox. Have you forgotten? Fox Crane. He has one of those. He has grandchildren already that he hates and does not do anything for, really, beyond probably money. You know, they live off the family money. But, yeah, grandchildren. And do you really think that he would be jumping for joy for a grandson whose last name is going to be Lopez Fitzgerald, not Crane? Like, Luis would never let his son's last name be Crane. So, girl, no, that ain't... He probably would not even acknowledge that child at all. Think, Sheridan, use your brain. You have a black belt in karate, girl. You can fly helicopters and airplanes. Think. So anyway, Luis then leaves for work, and he's heading up the Simone hit and run investigation, y'all. And I had a thought once he said this about, he's like, he's heading up the investigation. And I remember, oh, Alistair just got to town. What if it was Alistair that hit Simone? Like, maybe he wasn't driving, but maybe he was in the car that hit her. And he was like, just drive. Huh? Like, we can see Alistair doing that, right? I mean, I could see him hitting her with his car himself, but he doesn't drive his own car. Like, I'm sure he's being chauffeured around in, like, a town car. And do y'all think that it's Alistair that did the hit and run? Because I think so. I don't know. So anyway, we end this week with Shuise, where Sheridan is stunned when Alistair walks into the cottage and says to her, Sheridan, let your father give you a hug. It's been so long. It's been too long. Stunned. Scene end. Over. That's actually how the whole week ended. But yeah, that's Sheridan and Louise this week. I'm interested to see what they do, what bullshit they come up with to ruin these people's lives. And honestly, y'all, let me know, please. Do y'all think that Alistair did this? I think so. Do we ever get to the bottom of who hit Simone? I don't know if we do. Okay. Moving right along, we're going to move into our troubled marriages portion of the podcast. There wasn't too much here. We'll quickly talk about TC and Eve because they come up again at the hospital. And I put all of the hospital stuff in with magic. And you will know why once we get there. But at one point, just quickly, I literally have one note about TC and Eve here. When they're at the hospital with Simone and they're worried about her or whatever, TC questions Eve, saying why she said that she couldn't bear to lose another child. And honestly, I don't even know why I'm bringing this up because this was actually so stupid, but maybe that's why I'm bringing it up. He questions her about it and he seems like suspicious at first. And then he says, I have my suspicions, right? And then... she doesn't answer. She doesn't even begin to answer. He goes, You get so personally involved with your patients that when they lose a baby, it feels like you're losing a baby of your own. If what? And I wrote, if that's what you think, then why even ask the question? It was just so stupid. I don't like TC. And that's all I got to say about them for right now. Okay, Sam, Grace, and Ivy Crane. So we pick up where Grace is talking to Jessica at Tabitha's house where they're staying because their house was sucked to hell, remember? And she's talking to Jessica about her marital woes. It's like Jessica's like 15. Why are you confiding in your child about these very large things in your marriage, especially like about infidelity? Like this whole thing is about your husband's alleged infidelity at this point, right? Like he kissed Ivy at the party and all of this stuff. Anyway, Grace decides that she's gonna go to the station and try and work things out with Sam. Jessica's very excited about it, because Grace has decided it's been too long. She's ready to forgive her husband and move on. Side note, at one point in this conversation, Grace tells Jessica, because Jessica's like excited, like, are you gonna be staying the night at the police station? Like, real girl talk. I don't know, between this mother and daughter that just felt odd to me, but maybe I'm just whatever. So Grace looks at her and she's like, "You just make sure you're up in time to open up the shop and serve breakfast at the B&B." Poor Jessica. She is just a child worker. Like they just worked it. That baby has no life outside of the shop, the B&B, and giving advice to her mama. Bless her little heart. But that's not important. It's just a side note, something I picked up. Anyway, so at the station, Sam is sleeping and he's dreaming of Grace. He's dreaming of Grace and making love to Grace. And then Ivy shows up, gets naked, and climbs into bed with this man. And she starts to kiss him, and he's going, "Oh, Grace, oh, Grace." And she says, "No, Sam, it's me, the woman. I'm the woman you love. It's me, Ivy." And she's kissing him while he's asleep, assaulting him, let's be clear. Let's be clear. This is an assault on this man that would never have been framed that way in 2001, but in 2023, and this is an assault. So she's kissing him. He wakes up and realizes it's Ivy, and he hops out of bed. He jumps up like a cat, just like Julian. He's like, "Ivy, what are you doing here? I've told you over and over again, I love my wife." They fight. They do the same thing back and forth of, "No, Sam, you love me. No, I don't love you. I love Grace. I keep telling you, please leave me alone." She's harassing him, and he's the police chief. He should arrest her for harassment. If that would have been my move, if I was him, I would arrest Ivy for harassment, sexual harassment, whatever kind of harassment it is, because this went a step too far. This went way too far. But he does not do that. He does not do that. No, instead, he tries to get Ivy to leave, and he tells her, "You need to leave, or I'm gonna throw you out of here on your naked behind." And she's like, "Well, what do you think will happen if you throw me out of here on my naked behind? It'll cause a scene. Like, we're at the police station. Everyone will talk. What will Grace think about me leaving here naked?" And so she basically stirs up this idea in his head that he can't throw her out because everyone will talk and Grace will believe the worst. Basically. So he says to her, like, "What happened to you? Why are you so comfortable with humiliating yourself over and over again?" And he wonders out loud, like, "How can you make a fool of yourself over and over again? How does that not faze you?" And she says very aggressively, You want to know what happened to me? 20 years in a loveless marriage that wouldn't have happened if my father hadn't sabotaged my relationship with you. And he says, I don't want to embarrass and humiliate you anymore, but you need to leave before I throw you out on your naked butt. Like, he says it again, and she does the whole thing of what will you do? Like, what will happen if you throw me out naked? Blah, blah, blah. So then she tries to convince him to kiss her, saying, I'll leave if you kiss me. That's just give me one kiss goodnight and I will be on my merry way. That's all you have to do is give me a kiss and I will leave. And he eventually relents and he kisses her. And Grace walks in and sees naked Ivy and shirtless Sam kissing. So of course she is pissed, right? She's like, oh my God, are you serious? Basically. And Sam tries to explain to Grace. He says, Grace, wait, let me explain. She says, don't bother. And she leaves. And Ivy very smugly, she doesn't leave. She says, don't bother. And Ivy very smugly tells her, well, if you had walked in just a little bit later, you'd walk in on a lot more than a little kiss. And then she drops the sheet that she had covering her body because she's naked, right? And she just like stands there in all her, because I'm sure she's stunningly beautiful naked, right? Like she's standing there in all her beauty glory, beautiful glory. And Sam says to Grace, you got to believe me. And she says, no, Sam, I'll never believe you again. And she leaves. Sam says to Ivy, he turns to her and says, you're nothing but a bitch. And he goes on about how she tricked him. He explains the whole thing. Turns out Grace was standing right in the hallway to hear the whole thing. She comes back in, basically calls Ivy pathetic and says she heard the whole thing. And then the phone rings and it's the news about Simone. So Grace and Sam, of course, they put all of this to the side to get to the hospital to be with their best friends whose daughter is in critical condition. So they get dressed and head over to the hospital. Sam gets dressed because Grace is already dressed, right? And so Grace is left alone with naked Ivy, and Grace calls her pathetic and tells her to get dressed. Ivy, of course, kind of turns the tables on her and she says, you're the one who walked in on your husband kissing another woman. Who's the pathetic one here, Grace? She knows how to play mind games. She is the Regina George of Harmony for sure. She knows how to play with the girls' minds. So Grace then tells Ivy, I've decided to fight for my husband and you are no match for me. She said, you have miscalculated, basically. Grace tells her that her first mistake is, you actually don't know anything about me or Sam. And then she says, your second mistake is that I don't have to fight nearly as hard for Sam because I'm already married to him, sweetheart. I wear his ring. Okay, Grace, go off, Grace. Go off, Grace. I'm here for it. I like spicy Grace. I love spicy tomato soup Grace. I do. And so then Sam comes back and tells Ivy to get on out of here. You get out of here. You get the hell out of here. And then Sam and Grace leave for the hospital. Ivy, of course, has no intention of giving up Sam. Once Sam, oh. They go to the hospital, and Sam and Grace, they just work everything out. They decide they want to stay together at the hospital. Then later they go back to the police station and they sleep together. Like they're back together again, happy family. So the next morning, Ivy goes to the secret spot in the park where she used to leave notes for Sam, and she writes him a note. All the same things she's been saying. I know you love me. A love like ours could never die. Yada, yada, yada. Can't wait for us to be back together. Pilar finds her in the park, and then the two of them have their very typical conversation where Pilar says, how could you do this? Sam is married to Grace. This is wrong. Ivy says, I had him first. He's mine. He loves me. I know he loves me. Yada, 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 yada. And Pilar implores her to give up on Sam, and of course, she says no. She says the important thing here is that Ivy says to Pilar, the longer Grace keeps Sam out of her bed, the better chance I have of getting him into mine. Cut to Sam and Grace in bed together. So, sorry, Ivy. You're going to have to take this L right now, girl. Take the L. So Sam and Grace are in bed together. They're talking about how they don't want to live apart anymore. Grace says that it's too crowded at Tabitha's house, and she doesn't want to be like a bad guest to have Sam come stay with them. But I don't know if it would be that big of a deal. Like, you would just stay in the room. Sam would just stay in the room with you, and Jessica and Charity would still stay in the room that they're in together, and Kay would continue to stay where she is over at Miguel's house. But I also understand her not wanting to be too much of a nuisance for Tabitha. But here's the thing. Y'all own I keep wanting to say Airbnb, but Airbnb did not exist in 2001. Y'all own a bed and breakfast. Why not the next time somebody checks out of the bed and breakfast, set that room aside for you and your, like, set a room aside for you, set a room aside for the girls. I don't know how many rooms are at the bed and breakfast, but you could at least set aside two rooms, or even just one room for you and Sam, and the girls can continue staying wherever they are. Y'all own a whole bed and breakfast. Anyway, they start talking about renting a house, because remember, their home has been sucked to hell. So they're like, we should rent a house, and they're excited to get their whole family back under one roof. So then Ivy shows up to the police station to get her clothes, allegedly, but it's really there. She's just there to bother Sam some more. But she is very shocked to find Sam and Grace there together, that they've have obviously spent the night together. Grace tells her, yes, we are back together. And Ivy says she doesn't believe it. She's like, I don't believe it. You love me, Sam. Girl, he has been telling you for over a year that he does not. Now, whether he does or not is debatable, right? We can debate that all day. But the man has been saying it a lot. And he has protested a lot against you. I mean, there has not been one moment outside of the time with the mist that he really relented when it came to you. That he just has never really faltered in saying, I love my wife, stay away from me, you bitch. I mean, he hasn't. He's kissed her a lot. I don't know. I guess you could look at it multiple ways. But she really has been pushing him a lot. And he has been telling her no a ton. So the fact that she goes, I don't believe it, is just ridiculous to me. But she does. She says, I don't believe it. You love me, Sam. And then Grace tells her, she says, Sam's love for me was stronger than any of your tricks. And now looking at you, I actually feel sorry for you. You're all alone. Okay. Ivy stands there speechless. She doesn't really have anything to say. And then she finally says, you know, I know when I've lost. I know when I'm done. I know when it's time to go. Do you? Do you know when it's time to go? Baby, you have really overstayed your welcome for a long time. Do you know when you've lost? Oh, Lord, Ivy. So she leaves. And she goes back to their little secret spot in the park where she left that note for him, grabs the note, sobs, is crying. And she says, it's all over. I really lost him. But far, far away, a mysterious man who is a photographer, he's on some island, on assignment on some island, is looking through some magazines because he thought that maybe some of his work would be in them. And he comes across an article about the Hell House being sucked to hell. And he sees a picture of Grace, and he is like, oh my God, Grace. He clearly recognizes this woman. And then he books a trip to Harmony. He's on his way to Harmony. So we'll find out who he is. I know who he is. I know who he is, but we'll find out together. We'll find out together. All right. So that's that. Moving right along, people. Man, you know what? I'm so happy to be back. Like, I'm enjoying it. Even though I don't have anybody to talk to about it, which hopefully next week I will. I'm enjoying this. I needed to get back into the groove. And, I'm having fun. I'm having fun. We're just We're just freestyling, having a good time. I'm enjoying it, talking about passions. All right. So we're going to talk about these faded couples, and then we're going to move right into Magic and the hospital and Simone and all of that. So there's not a lot with the there's not a ton with the faded couples that much, especially with Teresa, Ethan, and Gwen. There's just hardly anything. Let's start with Teresa and Ethan and Gwen. So, actually, there's something here. Ethan gives Teresa an engagement ring. Sweet. And they discuss Shuise and the recap of all the things that had happened that night. Ethan talks about how he's like, yeah, Luis would never keep a secret any more than you would, Teresa. There is so much heavy-handed talk about secrets in their, and specifically in their storyline. There, I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, this fucking dude won't shut the fuck up about secrets. Yeah, that's what happens when you keep secrets. You would never keep a secret from me, would you, Teresa? I'm really glad you and I don't have any secrets together, Teresa. I mean, it's constant. Every time this man comes on screen, he's talking about secrets. And he's so annoying. Anyway, so they talk about secrets. And later, Pilar comes in. They bring Pilar up to speed on what happened with Ethan and, no, I'm sorry. They bring Pilar up to speed on what happened with Shuise. And then again, just lots of heavy-handed allusions to secrets that ruin relationships. Ethan says, I hate secrets so much, and anyone who keeps them. Everybody keeps secrets, Ethan. Every single body keeps secrets. I'm sure you're keeping a secret about the dudes you probably hooked up with at boarding school. Y'all were experimenting. I know it. I know you're keeping some kind of secret. And secrets don't nece aren't necessarily malicious. It's just stuff that you don't have to tell anybody else. Like, there's certain things that you want to keep to yourself. I told my mom my deepest, darkest secret today, actually. I'm not gonna tell y'all. I'm not gonna tell y'all, just know it includes a Walmart. But it's not, I'm not, like, if I get married to somebody and I don't tell them this thing about the Walmart, it's not a big deal. Like, no, I know the secret that Teresa's keeping is kind of a big secret, but it's not even that, it's honestly not even that bad. Like, that's why I wish she would just tell him, because it's honestly not that bad. She could really easily be like, yeah, I was scared to t just say, I was scared to tell you because you've been talking about how much you hate secrets. And I had this, I knew this information. I was just trying to wait for the right time to tell you. Anyway, Pilar, Ethan goes into the kitchen for something, and Pilar tells Teresa, like, you have to tell him, your relationship's gonna be ruined if it ever comes out, yada yada yada. Teresa tells her, yeah, you know, it has been weird because, oh, well, she tells her, yeah, I can't tell him anymore because I have now lied to him. Because when the tabloid reporter asked her about Ethan's paternity and everything, when they were in the maze, Gwen asked her point blank, did you know about Ethan's paternity before the tabloid came out? And she said no to Gwen. But again, that just happened. You it right now you have the opportunity to just be like, hey, you remember when we were in the maze and I said that I didn't know, but actually I did know. And I had just been waiting for the right time to tell you, but then the tabloid came out and I'm sorry. You know, I think it's doable. I think it's doable. But she is 18, she's a child. So anyway, Pilar tells Teresa very sternly, you must tell Ethan the truth. You must tell him. And of course, Ethan overhears Pilar saying this and he comes out, oh, what does your mother want you to tell me, Teresa? What do you need to tell me? I can't stand him. So he sits down to hear what Teresa has to tell him, but the phone rings. And it's Miguel telling Pilar about, oh, it's Miguel, and Pilar is so surprised that he's not at home. This lady never knows where her kids are. She's like, Miguel, I thought you were asleep in Luis's room. Like, lady, come on. So he's calling to tell her about Simone and that they're at the hospital. So, of course, as soon as this information is told to Teresa and Ethan, they run off to the hospital without having this conversation. Ethan says, "Oh, what was it that you wanted to tell me?" And she says, "We'll talk about it later. This is more important." So they run off to the hospital where they comfort Chad and Whitney. Elsewhere, Gwen is like very anxious. This poor actress never acts with anybody else. She, except for Rebecca, she has like a couple of scenes with Rebecca, and honestly, that's them throwing her a bone because it's the conversations she has with Rebecca are unnecessary. Because all of her action, what little action she does by herself. So Gwen has a conversation with her mom, and then she doesn't listen to her mom, and she calls the tabloid reporter, and anonymously tells them that Teresa Lopez Fitzgerald is the person who sent the email about Ethan's paternity. And they are gonna run with it. They're gonna check it out and run the story. So it's just a matter of time before that comes out. So let's talk about Chad and Whitney. Chad and Whitney are grappling with the fact that they feel that it's their fault that Simone got hit by the car. They believe, and they are correct, actually, that, well, it's not their fault. She was delusional. But their version of the events is correct. She did see them kissing. She did get upset. She did walk out into the street and get hit. So they're grappling with their guilt, thinking that this all is their fault. And Whitney goes in to talk to Simone and holds her hand. Simone is unconscious. Like, she's alive, but it's touch and go, that according to the doctors, like, she might not make it. They're like, "Say your goodbyes because this might be it," kind of thing. Whitney grabs her hand, is tearfully telling her, bargaining, basically saying, "You know, I'm so sorry. And if you just wake up, I'll never see Chad again. He's all yours. He's out of my life. I promise you. Just wake up. Please wake up. I'll never see him. He'll be out of my life forever." Simone then squeezes Whitney's hand, which gives the family hope. But the doctors say it was just an anomaly. There has been no change with her state. So then Whitney tells Teresa, when Teresa comes to the hospital, she tells Teresa about her theory that this is all her fault, and because Simone saw her and Chad kissing, and she tells her that she promised that she would give up Chad. And Teresa says, "Oh, honey, you can't keep that promise. You and Chad love each other. True love, true first love. Like, this is a beautiful thing. You can't just give it up." And Whitney says, "My sister's life is way more important than my love life." And I get that. I get it. You know what? I'm not even gonna fault Whitney for this. Like, I'm not even gonna fault Whitney for this. I'm sorry. Is why I knew I couldn't have a co-host this week. I have been trying to get through this. Okay. I cannot fault Whitney for this because, yeah. Yeah. Everything's more important. You bargain. You say, like, "I'll give it all up. I'll give this back. I'll do whatever it takes if I can just have my sister back." And her life is more important. Her life is more important, and I get it. I think under old circumstances, I probably would have been like, "Okay, Whitney, girl, this is not, like, come on, it's not your fault, you know, this isn't, and this doesn't change anything." But that emotion is very real. That bargaining emotion is very, very real. And so okay, I'm on board. You'll give up Chad if you can get your sister back, and you'll stick to it. Fine. Fine. So, sorry. So elsewhere, Chad is having a similar conversation with Ethan, saying that he regrets not telling Simone and letting her down gently when he had the chance. And he says if she dies, he'll feel responsible. And then Simone like gets worse, and the alarms start going off, and she I guess she's like coding, and they have to use the defibrillator, and they're like clear, and they have to try to bring her back. They manage to stabilize her, but she's not out of the woods. Like, she's in very bad shape, according to the doctors. Whitney then talks to Chad, and she breaks up with him. She tells him, "I can't be with you anymore. I promised Simone that I would give you up, and that's exactly what I'm gonna do." Chad pleads with her. Like, they do a lot of back and forth for a long time. It's really emotional. They're crying. Both of them are crying. Chad doesn't want to break up. He's like, "No, this is ridiculous. It's too hard to find something so real like this. And we mean too much to each other. I love you, and I know you love me, and I'm not, I can't let you go." And then all of this leads to a kiss. It's a very beautiful, very passionate kiss. He pulls back and he's like, "That kiss told me everything I needed to know." Like, he's in denial, honestly. He doesn't want to let her talk because he knows that once she speaks, she's gonna say, "No, we're not. I'm standing on firm on what my decision." So he says to her, like, "Don't speak." Basically, "I'm gonna go get us some coffees, and I love you. And that kiss was so special. So I know it means that we're gonna be together, basically." And once he leaves, she says, "That kiss was so special, but it was so special because I knew it was the last time we would ever kiss." Poor Whitney, poor Chad. I feel really bad for both of them. I feel really bad for both of them on this, 'cause I do understand where Whitney is coming from, and I also understand where Chad's coming from. Like, they're neither of them are wrong. They're both right in the situation. So, yeah, it's not there's no easy answer here. All right, so that is that. Let's go on and get into magic. We pick up with all the kids at the hospital. Charity comes in hot. Like, we come in hot on this week. Charity confronts Kay about finding her and Miguel in bed together. She's like, "Why were you in bed with Miguel?" And Kay deflects, saying, she's like, "Simone is so much more important than this right now." And then she says, "And everybody knows that you and Miguel are in love, and that basically," she says, "I'm no threat to your relationship. Everybody knows you're in love, and no, Miguel would never even look at another girl." But she doesn't explain why they were in bed together. And I mean, the reason they were in bed together is because Kay had tricked him into being in bed with her. Like, he didn't want to be there, but she like faked cried and begged him to like hold her till she fell asleep. So then Father Lonigan shows up and he checks in on his soulless creature, Kay. He's like, "Hey, soulless creature, how you doing?" No, he checks in on Kay, asks her if she's gotten her soul back yet. And she says she has no clue where her soul is. And he asks her if she's still scheming on Charity and Miguel. And she says very coyly, she's like, "Well, I've tried one or two things." And then she uses Charity's visions to rationalize her behavior. She says, "Well, Charity's the one who's been having all these visions of me and Miguel together. And so I'm just taking that as a sign that I need to do what I need to do to make it all come true," kind of. Father chastises her and says, "Have you learned nothing? Your entire family is lucky to be alive. Your family's lost everything. You have no home, all because you got in league with this evil being and sold your soul to them." And he says, "If you don't get your soul back, you will be damned to burn in hell for all eternity," and tells her, "You need to change your way, get your soul back and change your ways. Get right with the Lord, Kay." And he tells her, he says, "If you don't get your soul back, you'll never be able to feel, and you'll never be able to love, and you'll never be able to feel the love of a man, not even Miguel. So what's the point of having Miguel if you can't feel love from him, right?" And that was good. That was a good one, Father. On the other side of the hospital, Charity is feeling really uneasy about Kay. She started having like these little flashes of when Kay's face was like ghoulish after she sold her soul. She's seeing little things, little glimpses of when they were in hell, when she was in hell, and like she can see that Kay like didn't help her. She's starting to remember certain things, right? And so she asks Reese about his all the research he had been doing into the occult and about evil spirits and stuff. And she says, "Did your research turn up anything about people without souls?" He says, and I quote, "Yeah, there was this one website all about soulless people." God, I love this show. There was this one website all about soulless people. So let's go to this one-stop shop so we can learn all about people without souls. So he offers to show it to her on one of the hospital computers. They find like a computer lab, I guess. And then she starts reading about people without souls, and it describes all of the things that Kay has been afflicted with lately. It says that people without souls are always cold, that they can't cry or show emotions, which they've been saying that Kay can't show emotion, but I've been seeing some emotion from this girl. But anyway, they can't cry or show emotion, and they can't like go into a church, and sometimes they take the shape of a monster. And then Charity remembers that Kay could have helped her out of hell, and she didn't, which I don't know if Kay could have helped her out of hell. I think Kay would have gotten pulled into, like, if Kay, like, Kay stood there. Let's not, Kay definitely stood there while Charity got dragged to hell. But what would have happened? I mean, Miguel went in there to try to get her, grabbed it, couldn't get back out. He got dragged to hell. She stood there. Yes. What was she supposed to do? Go to hell for you? I mean, I know that Kay did what Kay did so that Charity will be dragged to hell. Well, she didn't, in her defense, she did not know that that was what was going to happen to Charity. I don't know why I'm rationalizing this shit. It was horrible. But yes, from Charity's perspective, Kay stood by and did nothing as Charity was dragged to hell, and she remembers this. So, as she's reading all this, Reese like leaves to go check on Simone, and Miguel comes in, and Charity pro pro and Miguel comes in, and Charity proclaims, "Kay doesn't have a soul." That's what she says. That's just like the first thing out of her mouth to Miguel. Not like, "Hey, babe, hey, come here. Like, let me show you this interesting thing." No, Kay doesn't have a soul. Miguel, of course, is like, "What are you saying, sweetheart? Are you just tired? I think you're just tired. I think you need a, do you need a nap? Does baby need a nap?" No, he doesn't actually tell her she's tired, but he says he can't believe it. And he says, like, "Why would you say that?" Charity says, "I'm gonna prove it. I'm going to prove that Kay doesn't have a soul." And then she just proceeds to show him the website. And they talk about how she can't show emotion. She asks him, "When was the last time you saw her show any emotion?" And he does, to his credit, he says, "Well, she was crying like tonight in bed. She was crying because she said that nobody loved her. And that's why I was like consoling her when you got there." And Charity says, "Well, did you see any real tears? Like, was she really crying? Think about it really hard." And he's like, "I think so." He's like, "I don't know. I think so." But but then there's the part where she's hasn't been to church with them in months, and every time they want her to go, she has an excuse. And that she's been cold to the touch a lot. They have mentioned that a lot. So Charity says to him, "Kay has no soul, and I'm really worried about her." Okay, sweetheart. So then Reese comes in, and she also tells them that she remembers that Kay was there when she was being dragged to hell. And she remembers her arguing with Hecuba about her soul. She says, "It's hazy, but I think I remember her arguing with Hecuba about her soul." And she says that Kay just stood there and watched as if she wanted her to be pulled to hell. Miguel says he wants to believe her, but can't understand why Kay would want to hurt her own cousin. She's your cousin. She loves you. And Reese says, well, that wouldn't matter if she didn't have a soul, which is fair. Fair point, Reese. And then they start to speculate how Hecuba could have possibly even gotten Kay's soul. And at this point, they decide to just go talk to Kay about it to get to the bottom of things. Remember that Simone has just gotten hit by a car and is like on her deathbed. And this is like the conversation that these fucking kids are having. Charity. So they go and interrogate Kay about why she isn't crying. She's like, this is your best friend. Why aren't you crying? Everybody else is crying. Why aren't you? And she starts to avoid all the questions. She's like, first she says, well, I'm just trying to be strong for everybody. Like, everybody's falling apart. I'm trying not to fall apart. I'm upset. And then Charity's like, well, let's go to the chapel and pray for her. And Kay says, no, I want to be here just in case anything changes. And then that's when Charity looks at Miguel and goes, I think I was right. And Kay's like, right about what? What are you talking about? And Miguel asks her outright, do you have a soul or are you a soulless being? Oh my God, these children. Do you have a soul or are you a soulless being? She calls the claim ridiculous. She's like, you guys are being ridiculous. You've been watching too much Buffy. And then she fakes some emotion and some outrage. She starts to kind of cry and runs off. And Miguel and Reese go after her and to comfort her. Charity then talks to Father Lonnegan because she's not convinced. Miguel and Reese both feel bad that they made her feel bad, so they run after her to comfort her. Charity's like, I ain't buying it. That's some bullshit. So she goes over to talk to Father Lonnegan and she asks him, Father, how could I prove without a shadow of a doubt that someone doesn't have a soul? And he says to Charity, who are you talking about? And he says, I'm sorry. And he says to Charity, who are you talking about? And she says, I have reason to believe that my cousin Kay doesn't have her soul anymore. And he says to her, Charity, you're a good person. I would think, basically, he says, I would think you would want to help a person who doesn't have a soul. And she says, you're right, Father. I should be trying to help, not expose Kay. How can I help? How can I help? And he tells her, pray. Pray for your cousin. Pray that she gets her soul back. If that's what you really believe, pray for your cousin. So she goes to the chapel to pray. Meanwhile, Lord Jesus, Lord, we got to talk about Timmy and Tabitha. We're almost at the end here. I don't know how long we've been going, but we're almost at the very, very end. Timmy and Tabitha are back at their home arguing about what they did to Simone. Because remember, they did this was gruesome. I didn't care for it. After Simone got hit by the car, Tabitha made Timmy help her drag Simone's body like off the street and hide her body under some newspaper so that the kids wouldn't be distracted and that Miguel would make love to Kay. And it was all ridiculous. It all, none of it worked. It was stupid. There was no reason for them to have done this. It was gory and grim and just macabre, and I just didn't care for it. So these two are arguing about this because Timmy's like pissed. He's upset that Tabitha made him do it. He feels horrible for Simone, hopes she's not dead, and is just worried about all the kids because he's a good little guy. Tabitha just goes back to talking about how they need to separate Charity and Miguel for good. And then the soul starts to glow. She has Kay's soul and it starts to glow. And Tabitha at first thinks that the soul is trying to help her figure out what to do, but then it starts to try to murder her. Like it, the chain t goes around her neck and it's getting tighter and tighter and it's starting to strangle her. And she yells to Timmy, help! Kay's soul is trying to kill me! And it lifts her up in the air and is dangling her and she's just like hanging by her neck from this chain. And Timmy tries to like find something to cut the chain with to get Tabitha down. He finds a pirate sword in a chest, and then he just daydreams about fighting Blackbeard, the pirate. What are we doing? Like we get this whole like scene of Timmy fighting Blackbeard the pirate. Fine. Okay. Then he snaps out of it and he goes to try to free Tabitha, but instead he decapitates her. rolls across the floor. But she's fine. She starts talking like, "What the hell did you do, Tim Tim? Look at me." He picks her up. He says, "Oh no, Tim. Oh no, Tabby. What have I done?" And he says, "I know. I know. I can get Dr. Eve Russell to sew your head back on. She's a genius." Tabitha doesn't say anything. Like, anything. What kind of plan is this? What kind of plan is this? You're gonna t the doll is gonna take the severed head of the witch next door along with her body to the hospital and have Eve, Doctor of the Year Eve Russell, sew it back on. Anyway, Timmy like rushes out r holding Tabitha's head. Tabitha's body like starts running behind them. There's a lot of shenanigans with the head. He drops it. It rolls all over the place. They almost get hit by a car. People see them. Like, it's just there's a lot of shenanigans. But eventually, they get to the hospital. Once they get to the hospital, Tabitha finally says to Timmy, "Just hand my head to my body and I'll put my head back on." Why didn't we do that at the house? Why did we come all the way over here? Well, we came all the way over here so that Kay's soul could be in the vicinity. That's why. But like for writing purposes, but narratively it doesn't make any sense. So he gives her head, she puts it back on. It should be noted that Reese was one of the people that saw Timmy running with Tabitha's head, but by the time he got to them, Tabitha had put her head back on and Timmy had gone back into doll mode. So he had no proof, and there's more pressing things going on in the hospital, so he went back into the hospital. Timmy now has Kay's soul because I can't remember entirely, but because Tabitha's like headless body gave it to him because the soul had been trying to kill her, so I guess she put it around his neck. And so now he has her soul. It's like glowing, it's hot. He doesn't know what to do with it. He and Tabitha kind of argue again. Because she's like, "Well, now that we're at the hospital, we should go in and revel in the Russell's misery." Ugh, And Timmy was like, "No, we've done enough bad things. Timmy wants to go out and do some good. I'm gonna go find something good to do," is what he says to her. And then he walks off, and that's when he finds Charity in the chapel. Makes his way to the chapel. He hears Charity's prayer, because Charity prays that Kay gets her soul back. And then, elsewhere in the hospital, Father Lonergan brings everybody in and says, "Everybody, we need to pray. Let's pray for Simone. This is what we have to do, because the doctors are telling them this is it. Like, we don't know. She's not gonna make it, basically." So they all gather around to pray. Kay is like, fuck, I can't pray, and they're gonna figure out that I'm not, that I don't have my soul." Tabitha's there and she's like, "Shit, I don't want to pray. I'm not gonna pray." Grace tries to get her to pray and she's like, "Oh, there's something wrong with my knee, darling. That's my best Tabitha, leave me alone." And so since Kay doesn't start praying, Miguel looks at her, and Miguel and Reese both look at her and are like, "Maybe we were right about her. Maybe she doesn't have a soul." And it's just at this moment that Timmy breaks the soul vial, right? And the soul goes back into Kay's body. It's also at this moment, once he breaks the vial, all of the alarms, everything's going off in Simone's room. And then the doctors come out and say, "I don't know what happened. She's fine. She's gonna be fine." And everybody's like, "Oh my God, our prayers were answered, blah, blah, blah." And everybody's really excited except for Kay. Like, Kay's like just standing there. And Charity, Miguel, and Reese are looking at her kind of sideways, like, "Oh my God, Kay really doesn't have a soul. Like, how is she not showing any emotion right now?" And then that's when her soul re-enters her body and she just starts leaping for joy. She runs over. She's like, "This is the happiest I've ever been." She's crying tears of joy. She's just so excited. And they are like, "Oh, I guess she does have a soul. Never mind." And Charity says, "Or maybe my," no, I think Miguel says, "I guess you were wrong, Charity." And then she's like, "Or maybe my prayers were answered." Girl, ugh. Even though, like,
Like, it wasn't her prayer. Well, I guess it kind of was a prayer. I feel like Timmy would have given Kay her soul back anyway. But hearing Charity, that hearing that that's what Charity wanted, of course, definitely. So Timmy answered Charity's prayer. Timmy answered Charity's prayer. So then a final little addendum here. Father Lonigan talks to Kay, and Kay tells him, "Guess what, Father? I got my soul back." And he says, "So you're gonna be good now, right? Like, you now that you have your soul, that's great, but you have to keep it clean." And she's like, he's like, "You got to stop going after Miguel. Are you gonna stop that?" And she says, "Yeah, I'm gonna stop going after Miguel. I'm not gonna do it anymore." And she just keeps go saying to herself, once he walks away, she says, "I'm going to be good. I'm going to be good. I'm going to be good." Oh, sweetheart, we love that you try it. We love a queen that tries new things. So that's it for the day. That's the whole shebang, the whole thing she wrote. Thank you all again for sticking in there with me, listening to the podcast, tuning in. Thanks again for all of the lovely messages over my hiatus. I really appreciate it. Remember, you can always catch me on all the social media. We have new merch on the Passions Podcast website. I'm gonna link everything in the description. So, follow me, buy some stuff, leave me a tip. Something again, I did quit my job, so anything you can do for me will help. You know, a tip, join the Patreon, buy some merch, anything you can do to support. If you like the show, please do. Everything will be linked in the description. And with that, you are my passion for life.